all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Tuesday morning, February 13th, 6 past 7, nice to have you along in Up North News Radio on this Galentine's Day. It's also Carnival, Mardi Gras, it's World Radio Day, Travel Africa Day, World Cheddar Day, Crab Rangoon Day, and Tortellini Day. So if any of those are up your alley, happy day to you. Our guests this hour include Hans Breitenmoser, a Lincoln County dairy farmer, and Beth Haskovic from the Wisconsin Office on Rural Prosperity, on the ways that partnerships can help get some new projects started in some of Wisconsin's smaller hometowns. It was on this day in the year 2000, as Roger reminds us, that the last original Peanuts comic strip was printed in newspapers the day after Charles Schulz passed away, who gave us Charlie Brown and all of the other characters there. And Rob sends us a note from Tigerton where it's cloudy and 29 degrees. It's snowing along 29 between Shawano and Green Bay, and the roads are a little slick. There's light snow reported in other parts of Wisconsin this morning, including Park Falls, where it's 22 degrees right now. Lake Wissota's at 30, Hayward 25. Folks listening to Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, it's 28 right now. Green Bay 31, La Crosse 29. Same with Rapids 29, Oshkosh at 30. It's 27 in Madison, 27 in Waukesha, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us now to tell us a bit more about the light snow this morning, and then maybe a little bit more snow coming up yet this week. Apparently, I'm going to need official confirmation. It is still winter, and apparently this snow thing can still happen, Brittany.
Good morning. Look how excited
yes.
she is.
I am just so excited right now. I mean, I'm looking out the window. I see snow flying here in Wausau.
Oh, wait. It comes together now. I'm listening to Pete Schwabe the other night. You can hear him weeknights here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And Pete referred to Snow Queen Brittany Merlot. So apparently you have a nickname already. And that's now I see why you're so excited about the snow.
Can we call her she's a purveyor of snowetry?
Ooh, yes.
Snowetreed. Oh, you're making her so happy. Right. Tell us more, Brittany.
I love it. Hey, you know what? It's February in Wisconsin. We need the snowfall. So here we go. A little bit this morning. No accumulations expected from it, but it looks pretty. And of course, a little bit of slick conditions in towards Green Bay. So the reason why we're seeing this light snowfall this morning is because we're below freezing, for one, finally. And of course, we have a little cold front pushing through the area and kind of draping a stalled front in towards Green Bay and the Northwoods. Plus, we've got winds out of the north. So scattered flurries still continuing throughout the morning hours. Then it's going to die down this afternoon. We'll see more pockets of sunshine peek out statewide. But a good chunk of us are stuck under cloudy skies right now, unless you're on the state line. You have beautiful sunshine at the moment. So we'll see more sun as the day goes on. Temperatures a little bit cooler today. We'll see highs in the upper 20s into the Northwoods. So staying cooler. And then mid to upper 30s further south in towards the state. So a high pressure will build in overnight. We'll see more sunshine tomorrow. And the winds start to move out of the south. So that's going to pump our temperatures back into the 40s out ahead of the next system. So that strikes tomorrow night. It's going to bring in the form of mainly rain down, of course, to the southern parts of the state. But in central Wisconsin, we are going to see a chance for some ice mix there and then flipping over to snow as well, especially as those temperatures drop below freezing and into Thursday morning. So we are looking at a little accumulations of about 1 to 3 inches. 3 is going to be on your high side, and that'll be more towards Lake Michigan from that lake-enhanced snowfall as we go into Thursday morning. So a little bit of precipitation, and then we cool things off into the weekend.
Rob is asking on Facebook if you're going to be able to make a snow angel whenever we get some snow on the ground. I think it has to be closer to the 3 than the 1 inches. And the gentleman from Waukesha has a question, Mr. Yeah, Mark.
So, Miss Merlot.
Yes.
There's a film that I saw back in the late 90s in the theaters that was quite amazing in the theaters, and then I watched it on television. I was like, this movie's terrible. And I always made fun of it for the fact that, oh, they're gonna make a sequel, and how are they gonna make a sequel? And they've made a sequel, and I thought of you immediately because they've made a sequel to the movie Twister.
Yes, they have.
Is it a sequel or a remake?
No, it's a sequel. It's a sequel.
Seriously?
Because they're calling it Twisters. I thought of you immediately, and I'm like, you're seeing this, aren't you?
100%. I have to. I'm so excited. I've been waiting years for it.
I love Twister. I love the original, and I saw that commercial during the Super Bowl, and I'm like, no, don't, because I thought it was a remake. I'm like, you've got Helen Hunt. You're not topping that. Why are you trying?
So, and the late
if it's
Bill
a
Paxton.
Sequel, that's, yes, absolutely. He was amazing.
Yep.
Now if it's a sequel, that's, okay.
And the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, too. What am I talking about?
Yes. He was brilliant in there. He's so funny.
Yeah.
If it's a sequel, and now that I know Brittany's this excited about it, I mean, might have to make it some kind of a Civic Media group outing.
That Brittany's a storm chaser?
Yes, and I'm thinking maybe we go see it at a drive-in theater when it comes out. Maybe on a stormy night, you know?
Yes, set the scene perfect, right?
Yes, right.
Great, we're all
seeing the movie going, I don't think that's a good idea. Yeah. Melissa K chimes in on Facebook, Twitter, or Twister's one of my all-time favorite movies. Let's go, Brittany. See, Melissa's trying to steal you away too for it.
Melissa's down. She's excited. She wants to go storm chasing. So if you guys are in,
you took her from going to see a movie to storm chasing.
We talked about it yesterday morning.
Oh my goodness.
Like, wait a minute. I hope she's in. All right. Great. Brittany, we have so much to look forward to now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Right.
Yeah. You have a great day as well. It is 7:13 right now. So let's take a quick peek at sports here, because the Milwaukee Bucks appear to have finally figured out their defensive woes and turned them around. They have now, for the first time all season, won back-to-back games while giving up fewer than 100 points. They beat the Denver Nuggets last night at home, 112-95, and they're at home again tonight to host the Miami Heat. The Badger men's basketball team, meanwhile, takes their four-game losing streak into the Kohl Center tonight to host Ohio State. So between the Bucks and the Badgers games, we have sports across many of the stations on the Civic Media Radio Network. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more about your local station and where you can hear various games. The Badger game, by the way, will be on the Civic Media app as well. The Marquette men's basketball team has a 7-game win streak going. They will play at Butler tonight, and then they'll head to Connecticut on Saturday to face UConn, the top-ranked team in the country. Let's check out the women's basketball teams for a sec. The Badger women, they'll host Penn State next Sunday. The Marquette women's basketball team will be at DePere. That will be tonight, actually. Badger men's hockey team, still number 4 in the country after sweeping Notre Dame. They are at Ohio State this coming Friday and Saturday. The Badger women's hockey team, still number 2 in the country, and they take their 13-game win streak home to host the Gophers this weekend, and then they'll host Ohio State the next weekend to wrap up the season there. All right, in the Chippewa Valley, we have told you about how a big health care conglomerate, HSHS, is closing down 2 hospitals here in the Chippewa Valley, Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital here in Chippewa Falls, and that many Prevea clinics here in the Chippewa Valley will be closing. This will directly affect well over 1,000 workers, but then so many more patients and ancillary workers. And there has been such a scramble here to try to figure out how they're going to take care of all kinds of services. We've talked, for example, about obstetrics and how Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire, they did 823 deliveries last year, 823 babies. Where are all those moms going to go? Because again, Mayo, formerly known as Luther Hospital in Eau Claire, you know, they only have so many maternity beds. The Marshfield Health System Hospital in Eau Claire only has so many beds. Marshfield has said they're going to double their capability. That still won't take care of all the deliveries that would be lost at Sacred Heart. But it's so much more than that. It's the locked psych ward that we'll talk about in a minute. There's things like a morgue and blood draws for suspected drunk drivers, and a cancer treatment center, and a host of other things. But getting back to the psychiatric care, there has been a shortage of emergency beds in this part of the state, oftentimes for law enforcement, necessitating very long drives to Madison or to the Fox Valley to get people properly confined and treated as needed. A couple years back in the state budget, there was a push by Wisconsin or by Chippewa Valley lawmakers to get additional funds so that extra psychiatric facilities could be developed. And so that $15 million was allocated, but it has not yet been used. Sacred Heart was most likely, HSHS Sacred Heart, was likely going to put something there or at St. Joe's in Chippewa Falls. But that $15 million is still sitting there. It never got done. And there's still that need for emergency psychiatric services. So I noticed through the email yesterday in the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce newsletter, they were promoting that some of the local Republican legislators were introducing a bill that would repurpose that $15 million and turn it into grants that could be used in Western Wisconsin for psychiatric care in the meantime. And I wondered why I was only hearing the chamber promoting the Republican legislators and wanted to find out if this was a bipartisan proposal. Do the Democratic lawmakers in the area, do they have any concerns about it? Or as it turned out to be, were they just not even told about it? And the theory on that I have is, again, it has to do with redistricting. That if they were to reach out and include Democrats like Senator Jeff Smith and Representative Jody Emerson and others, and the maps were drawn in such a way that, you know, some of the local Republicans might actually be in the same district as one of the Democrats, you see where I'm going. Again, rather than work with Democrats, rather than give them the courtesy of working together on a bill because we don't want to give a Democrat any wins, they're willing to go it alone for the sake of partisan political gain. Just like they're doing on border security and on so many other matters in both Madison and Washington. It's a heck of a way to run a railroad when you're letting your own partisan selfishness get in the way of serving an entire region, especially a region in need, the way that the Chippewa Valley is, where party politics is basically the last thing any politician should be focused on right now. So we'll watch and see if this becomes a more bipartisan matter, since it's got to be signed by a governor for something to get done anyway. We'll continue unpacking the news on this.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know.
Again, released this day in 1967 by the Beatles. And again, my apologies for running headlong into the commercial break like a brick wall. Every so often, I forget that there's this clock over here that I should be checking now and then. And unfortunately, of all the many buttons and switches that Greg has at his disposal, one of them does not send an electric shock to my chair, at least.
Though I've ordered it many times.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. It happened.
Yeah, I know. In today's daily newsletter, you can sign up for it over at upnorthnewswi.com. Do that. And what did Christina put in there today? Vacation vibes. There are, in this story, five Wisconsin towns that feel like Europe. Arguably, there are several others, but you know there are definitely five that come to mind, so you can learn more about it there. And we're going to have to ring a bell or a buzzer again every time I say vibes, because I did not yet look at the transcript, Greg. I do not know how many times we used the word vibe or vibes yesterday.
Send me the transcript. I'll find out for you today.
Okay. Also in the newsletter, host families are needed, what it's like to welcome a foreign exchange student into your home. And then an article about how Wisconsin became one of the hardest states to vote in. And keep in mind that when we say hardest state to vote in, we don't mean, oh, well, that just means we're the most secure and that means we're not going to have fraud. No, there's a difference between security, preventing fraud, versus actually putting up obstacles to voting, to actually making it harder to vote because you don't want as many people to vote. So for that and more, sign up for our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and learn much more about that. There are, of the things that we can talk about politically, plenty in Wisconsin, but I want to bring up the story from Michigan, in part to say, well, at least things aren't as bad here as they can be in other states, but also as a reminder that we do find ourselves slipping to a degree in this country when it comes to just not no longer the systemic racism, not institutional racism, overt racism, white supremacy, white Christian nationalism, the kinds of things that, again, used to be unheard of because people like that, who were overt racists, knew better. They knew just to stay under their rock and go ahead and harbor any resentments you want, because, you know, if you're too public with it, you know, you will face consequences. But especially in the age of Donald Trump, as fewer people feel that sense of shame, as they feel more emboldened, and then they embrace social media, they're just coming right out and doing things that would have been unheard of in the past, which leads to this headline out of Michigan. Republican legislator loses his committee assignment and staff after an online racist post. The story says that House Speaker Joe Tate, a Democrat and a black man, said he will not allow the House to be a forum for racist, hateful, and bigoted speech. Republican State Representative Josh Shriver, who is white, shared a post on Twitter that showed a map of the world where the black figures, little stick people, greatly outnumber white figures. And then it had the phrase, the Great Replacement, which, of course, is part of a plot, a sinister plot, to diminish the influence of white people. Shriver is still allowed to vote on the House floor, but he has been removed from a committee, and there will be instead a general House of Representatives office that will still assist constituents. But as Speaker Tate said, Representative Shriver has a history of promoting debunked theories and dangerous rhetoric that jeopardizes the safety of Michigan residents and contributes to a hostile and uncomfortable environment for others. A message-seeking comment from Representative Shriver wasn't immediately returned to the Associated Press, but he defended his social media post last week, and he defended it by saying, quote, "I'm opposed to racists, race baiters, and victim politics," he told the Detroit News. But then he went on to say, "What I find strange is the agenda to demoralize and reduce the white portion of our population." You idiot. There is nobody looking to demoralize, much less reduce, the white portion of our population. There is only the professional victimhood that comes from people who have figured out that, like any other grifter, they can game the system. And in this case, it's by playing that somehow white men have become victims out in the world, and to make all kinds of claims about conspiracy theories. And again, once upon a time, it's not like these things didn't exist, but they didn't exist nearly as publicly. Again, staying under the aforementioned rocks. But now they're getting elected to political office and getting bolder in their postings. Thankfully, we still have people in their party and outside their party to denounce these things. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, released a statement Friday calling his post abhorrent rhetoric, saying, "We will never let those who stoke racial fears divide us." And that is exactly the right approach to take. It is to go on offense, to not roll your eyes, to not say, "Oh, just ignore it and it will go away." No, if you don't ignore it, it's only going to grow. And so it needs to be called out. And again, I appreciate that very much. And that's the reason we bring it up. Not to give this guy any kind of a spotlight, not to give him any kind of a stage, but to, again, say, no, this will be called out and will be called out properly. It's Mardi Gras today. It is Ash Wednesday tomorrow. That means that there's big doings going on in New Orleans and elsewhere. I've been to New Orleans, Greg. I've been to Bourbon Street. Great place. Not during Mardi Gras. I don't feel like I'm not that brave. I'm not that into big old touristy crowds to that extent. For people who go, I hope they, you know, stay nice and safe. And I like that people, you know, again, get in the spirit of, you know, music and camaraderie, not just drinking.
Yeah.
And also not just, there's a story out of Mardi Gras about another aspect of it that I think people just didn't think of for many years. The plastic beads that are basically creating a disaster in the Mississippi and the Gulf and the water supply as they're, you know, digging all this stuff up and realizing what an expensive and, you know, borderline health threatening danger this can be. So are we trying to be killjoys? No.
Nope.
We're saying have the party. Yep. But again, have the party responsibly.
Are you trying to take my beads away from me? That's my freedom. Don't take my freedom away. I will not have my beads replaced.
You got to fight for your right to throw beads. Oh no, don't. Yeah, you can. You know what? They did Mardi Gras for many, many years before throwing plastic in the water. We can do it for many years afterwards. Yeah.
Yes.
When we come back from the break, Hans Breitenmoser will join us along with Beth Haskovic from the Wisconsin Office of Rural Prosperity, talking about the ways that in Wisconsin's rural communities, all kinds of folks can come together in partnership and find the ways to help fund some projects that only help our small communities grow and flourish, something necessary for all of Wisconsin to benefit as we move forward on this Tuesday morning, February 13th, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, big town or small, when you're here, you're up north. Back in a bit. Back now on this Tuesday morning on Up North News Radio, where we quite frequently on Tuesdays will visit with Hans Breitenmoser, who's a dairy farmer up in Lincoln County, working on some tech issues right now. So we may or may not check in with Hans in a little bit here, but we do have Beth Haskovic with us, and she is with the Office of Rural Prosperity and a relatively new office. We talked about it a few weeks back, and then we want to get more into a kind of a specific program that is part of the office. Beth, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you here. Well, we learned so much about the office last time around that we didn't really get into the Thrive Rural Wisconsin program, so we're going to talk a bit more about that in just a bit. But let's do a recap first for folks that did not hear us back the first week of January. Tell us a bit more about the Office of Rural Prosperity, you know, what it is, what it does. It's still relatively a new office in state government.
Absolutely, Pat. So back in 2020, there was a realization that there needed to be a voice for rural communities in the state government. So Governor Evers created a Blue Ribbon Commission and pulled together a lot of rural stakeholders, created a something called the Rural Voices Report that has a number of recommendations and ideas of how can we support thriving rural communities. And so our office really came out of that effort. We're a one-stop shop to help rural communities navigate what state resources exist for them and help connect communities to resources. So we're really just an open door policy connector to rural voices across the state, and we help uplift rural voices throughout the administration.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the website here, and I was looking to put it up on the screen here in just a second. Ruralwi.com is where you'd find more information about that. So the specific program we want to talk about is Thrive Rural Wisconsin, an initiative through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, the Office on Rural Prosperity. And really, it sounds like this is about getting things done, but getting things done through partnerships which is really important because, again, there's no one community, there's no one city, there's no, you know, one tribe or others that can do everything on their own. And if you're working in partnership with each other and maybe with state government, you can have greater access to resources. So tell us, you know, what specifically the Thrive Rural Wisconsin program is all about.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Exactly. We want to be fostering collaboration with communities, amongst communities. And so Thrive Rural was designed to provide both technical assistance, which really means just coaching, support, additional staff time and project management support, and financial support. So these communities have access to grants up to $25,000 to help get projects ready so that they can apply for other state and federal funding opportunities. We've heard again and again through the Rural Voices report, through listening sessions that my office has coordinated, and then just kind of across national trends, that one of the biggest issues for rural communities is being able to have the staff time and support to be able to even apply for state and federal funding. So that's what we're really trying to partner with communities on. We've selected 10 communities we're really excited to work with over the next 2 years. And those communities each have a local leadership team that's comprised of local municipalities and villages, the county, and other local partners. And, you know, we'll be working with these communities at the state level, but also bringing in other nonprofit and government partners to help support the projects they're trying to make happen.
I really don't think enough can be said about the technical assistance end of it, because I know there are folks who would say, well, there's plenty of consultants in the private market and, you know, just go get a consultant for what you want. But through the state government providing technical assistance, doing so with the taxes that we're already paying, that, again, you're not having to reinvent the wheel. The area where I most frequently saw this, or most recently saw this, was up in the Boulder Junction area, where they decided that they wanted, you know, broadband internet speed. And so they, again, worked in collaboration with state government, getting technical assistance from people who have worked with other communities in the past. And it's, again, resources that we're already paying for. So why wouldn't we want to get the most out of it? I'm sure that's what this is all about as well.
Exactly. I think we're able to leverage the resources that taxpayer dollars are already going to. And even beyond that, we received a national grant to pay for some of the staff time for this project. So we're even making those taxpayer dollars go farther with the technical assistance we're able to provide through this program. So that, you know, being able to have basically a part-time staff member in addition to your team already just really helps make limited resources go further, because we know there are a lot of other issues and problems and day-to-day work that our local economic development partners, you know, have on their plates. And so we're just helping, you know, provide that extra support so that they can really move one or two specific projects forward.
In terms of those projects, and the website gives the general areas of them, and I'm wondering if you can talk about one or two specific types to give an example of what's going on, either something that's in progress or something that's already been done, because you list community-based economic development, which is, you know, sounds rather general, small business development, rural housing, community facilities, sustainable energy projects, and then organizational and financial management. Can you bring, how specific can you get as far as the types of things you're working on or already have done through Thrive Rural Wisconsin?
Yeah, so through the application process, we really wanted to hear what were the priorities of the communities we were working with. And so and where did those align with some of the projects we wanted to move forward? So we heard a lot about, you know, like in Vilas County, for example, there's a hospital site that, you know, community leaders have been thinking about what they want to do with that site to bring it back to life, to have it serve some sort of economic purpose. And so that's one redevelopment opportunity that we're really excited to explore with that local leadership team. In Sawyer County with the Lakota Ray tribe as well, they're looking at creating a new small business incubator to help support rural entrepreneurship in their community. And in the southern part of the state in Vernon County, they have an energy district that's looking at sustainable energy projects. So those are just a handful of the projects that we'll be working on. But we also have a number of housing projects because, as you know, rural housing is really a workforce issue. And so being able to attract workforce to rural communities is a really important problem that we need to all be working to solve for.
Oh, without a doubt that this is, you know, the housing shortage overall, but especially in rural areas, and especially, you know, that is generated toward workforce development is so key. And I was about to get into the whole role of, you know, public-private partnerships. And, you know, for me, it cuts both ways, that we want to make sure we're making clear that there's a role for, you know, the private sector in all of this when you talk about small business development and business incubators and everything. Though I have to say, at the same time, when it comes to the private sector, part of the reason we have, say, a housing shortage in rural areas is that there's not a lot of private sector incentive to do that. It's easier to build McMansions in the suburbs than it is to come to some of these rural areas and, you know, put a good workforce housing there. So again, it underscores the need for setting up a program like this, where you can encourage those public-private partnerships rather than just waiting for the private sector to get around to it. It's not the public sector doing it all. This is not, you know, an entirely government-run program. It's facilitating those partnerships, and that's what's going to work in these rural areas, I imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's everybody coming together to solve for problems, which I think is a strength of our rural communities. And so I don't think it's unusual or an odd approach. I think it's a really exciting approach and something that we can, help make that link also between what's happening at the local level and the state level, so we can help be that better resource navigator across all of the resources that exist in state government.
Talk about the value of the leadership teams that are involved in these things, because, again, in any community, you tend to have, you know, one or two or five people that are the ones who are willing to step up, but they understand they can't do it all on their own. But you also can't do this without, you know, some real leadership being shown at the local level. How important is that?
It's incredibly important. And, you know, a lot of things that get done in rural communities get done by volunteers. And so it's, you know, to have a leadership team comprised of both local officials, the county officials, you know, local nonprofit organizations, some of our regional planning commissions and regional economic development organizations. Some even include, our regional economic development directors, some of our other stakeholders, our key anchor institutions, like our hospitals and banks and school districts as well. You know, it's really everybody coming together to try to move projects forward and create more thriving communities.
I apologize if you covered this already, but in terms of those partnerships, can they happen among multiple, public entities like a county and a city, or a city and a village nearby, or these kind of, you know, just there's one central, you know, municipal or government entity?
We really encourage that municipalities and counties were working together in the application process for Thrive Rural. So the leadership team does represent both that local, village, or municipal governance, as well as the county governance, because each have different perspectives and leadership and decision making that can help make it easier to move some of these projects forward.
So for folks that might have heard this and want to learn about it a bit more, can you take us through kind of the process? Where does somebody start to learn more? What is it that they need to know to put together in order to apply for this partnership?
So we've just selected our first 10 communities. So the application process is now closed. We're posting some information on our website, ruralwi.com, so folks can follow along with the progress as these projects start to unfold. We're actually tomorrow, we're really excited to have our kickoff meeting with our first 10 communities and get to hear directly from them and meet in person after the application process closed. So it's all being kicked off tomorrow, and we're really excited to be celebrating that.
All right. And then, we'll continue to follow that program and look at the progress for these first entities that are in it. So then to take it back to overall to the Office of Rural Prosperity before we wrap things up for this morning, either other programs or events or ways that people can learn more about the office overall that people can learn about?
Yep. So as you mentioned, ruralwi.com is kind of the clearinghouse for our office and for information about our office. We have some great tools on that website. We have a grant searching tool that communities can use to find grant opportunities. We have a program that our office facilitates that's a cooperative development grant that helps entities looking at starting a cooperative or expanding a current cooperative get some feasibility study and development dollars to support the development of that cooperative. That information's on our website. We have rural success stories on our website as well, which are really just celebrating what's going well in rural communities throughout the state and giving a platform to elevate the good news of a number of different projects. One of my favorite projects that we share out on our website about is in Sauk Prairie and a partnership to develop rural school teachers. They just opened a new facility this week, but they created a scholarship program for students who were exploring teaching and incentivizing those teachers, those student teachers, to come back to rural communities to become teachers. And so that was funded through a workforce innovation grant from the state. So that's just one example of the many stories we have on our website.
That's what I was going to say. Many stories. When you get to the banner up on top, there is right there. It says success stories, and click on that to see all the different ways that the Office of Rural Prosperity can be a partner with local leaders. Beth Haskovec, thank you so much for telling us more about it, for giving us an update, and I can't wait to follow the progress. Have a great
day. Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. And we'll get Hans to join us in a couple of weeks here again. And in the meantime, we've got Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio joining us in just a bit. You're up north. Chad Holmes in just a second, but first to take you behind the scenes on the program where we all meet with each other. It's not Zoom, but it's something that acts like Zoom and, of course, has a chat window in there. And poor Hans Breitenmoser was trying so hard to join us, but we were running into technical issues, and the chat behind the scenes has Greg, you know, asking Hans about this setting or about this setting, try this or that. Hans's response was... those all appear good. I even had my 11-year-old look at it. To which Greg says, that's odd. Not your 11-year-old, but, you know, I think any 11-year-old could probably program some of these things better than we can these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I figured if an 11-year-old can't figure it out, what am I going to do?
No, it's out of my league. The only other person that works with this stuff more is Chad Holmes, who has to do all these remotes from all over God's green earth. But he has technical issues from time to time, don't you, Mr. Holmes?
I hate technology.
And good day, folks. Have a wonderful
Grandpa
day.
Grandpa has spoken. Yep, that's it. And yet somehow
I'm always glad
happens.
When I'm on the air.
After the mimeograph, it all went downhill.
Oh, don't say that. I miss mimeographs. Remember that smell from the paper? You know, the rotating drum?
No, I don't, Pat. I've never used a mimeograph. I was born in the latter 20th century.
Smalls, you're killing me over here. Mr. Holmes, how are you?
I'm doing great. It is the start of my favorite 3-4 weeks of the year.
Postseason.
Winter high school playoffs.
Here we go. Yeah.
Starts tonight.
What's it starting with?
Hockey.
Okay.
Yeah, some Wausau West hockey tonight as the playoffs begin. So, and even a little snow falling outside the window here in downtown. So it is winter finally.
Very nice. Boys and girls?
Yeah, we have boys and girls. The girls don't start till next week, though, for
okay.
us, because our team is pretty good and they get a bye. So.
Oh, all right. And basketball tournament, not far behind.
Not far behind at all. So. I tell you, it is. It's really a fun time of year.
It's the most wonderful time for Chad.
For Chad Holmes.
He hates technology. He loves local sports, and he's talking to you. That's it.
I like this. Yeah, we'll. Yeah, improv.
I will not sing. That's one thing I can't do.
Mm. All right, you have a mayor's race up there that you're continuing to cover in the Wausau area. Don't know if anything new is happening there. Are we at the point now where it's like, you know, are ads playing nonstop or putting up lawn signs because there's no snow on the ground yet?
I don't see any ads on the airwaves, but actually it's funny because this morning I get in and I go to my email and I'm thinking, okay, this is starting to get serious. One of the challengers to the incumbent, who is Katie Rosenberg, is a city councilman, Doug Denny. And one of the issues that's been discussed recently is the ongoing replacement of lead water service lines in the city of Wausau. And the mayor is very aggressive in terms of trying to get these lead water lines replaced. And there are others who say, well, we should be going a little bit more slowly. And she has set up some meetings with what's called Community Infrastructure Partners, who is the group that is working right now with the city on this. And she has set up on Tuesday, I believe it is, as I look at this press release from Mr. Denny, about, you know, talking to the council to answer questions, because there's been some questions being put out there.
Questions.
And Alderman Denny, again, one of the candidates for mayor, put out this press release talking about how this is a highly unusual process that smacks of impropriety. Clearly, these meetings should not be going on behind closed doors. No member of the council should sign up for these private meetings. And again, right now, I'm going to come out and say right immediately, I am not 100% knowing whether this is something that can be done, whether or not it does have any issues with open meetings laws or not. But my first thought is we're starting to get closer and closer, and it's going to be, so far, I think I've had both the mayor and Alderman Denny on each of the last couple of months. I bringing them on each once a month to talk about issues and talk about the race and everything else. So far, it's been pretty, I think, nice. But I think right now we're starting to see, as we get closer and closer, things are going to start to get, I think, a little bit more with
silly.
Some sharp elbows.
I'm going to say silly rather than sharp elbows, because
I don't want to go that
you
far
don't,
yet.
You don't have to. I will, because I'm going to say I have no patience. No patience for somebody that goes, oh, we better slow down on replacing lead water lines. It's like, oh, let's not put out that fire quite so quickly. How many firefighters are we sending? You know, I mean, what's this going to cost us to have this? They're lead water lines. I have so much admiration for the patience of Katie Rosenberg.
Yeah.
She is a much nicer person than I will ever be. So I'm going to go ahead and be the bad guy and say that a lot of people who are casting doubts or casting aspersions on replacing lead water lines, whether it's in Wausau or Milwaukee or other places, have motivations that are rooted either in politics or in other areas that I don't even want to explore right now. But if you're not acting for your neighbor in Wausau, as if that lead line were in your own home or in your neighbor's home or in your mother's home, I certainly wouldn't want you in elected office. But that's my editorial on that.
No,
you have to talk to these folks.
Every time
go ahead and ask questions about, you know, is something a proper use of resources? But as soon as you said, you know, people want to slow this down, I'm sorry, I lost my patience.
Well, and the mayor has said every time I've had her on and we talk about this issue, is that she has no discomfort in the action she has taken. That to be aggressive in some of these issues, where when she was elected 4 years ago, she did not expect this to be one of those huge when you come into office, you don't know what the problems are going to be.
Yeah.
And you either try to fix them or you try to kick the can down the road. And she's not been somebody who thinks that we should be kicking the can down the road.
Greg, you look like you were going to say something about it.
Oh, no, no. I know exactly what you're talking about, working through mayoral races and working for a mayor directly. It's when you walk in the door, you got to look at what the problems are and say, all right, let's fix these. And with, you're right, Pat, with lead pipes, I mean, this is not even lead water lines. It's not even a question. Things are about to get real crazy in Kenosha. We have 9 people running in the primary.
Yeah. And again, let's try to put people first where we can. Chad, thanks for the update. Look forward to talking to you and your show 8 to 10 on Bull Falls Radio. Have a great day.
See you, Chad.
Thank you, Mr. Bach. We'll catch you on Matt and Air on Air. Thanks to the rest of you for being here with us. We'll do it again tomorrow morning here on Up North News Radio.